كولتوري، an encounter with people of different cultures. I wish to welcome, this is Father Joe Ngwanet, and I wish to welcome you for this first program of Kulturi. It might look strange to have the name of a program in Maltese while it is being carried on and produced in English. There are two reasons why I didn't use the word culture, because there are varieties of culture and language is one of the highest expressions of culture. And in this sense, by using the word in Maltese and not in English, I want to express this variety of cultures. The structure of this program will be mainly that we'll have people from different cultures and we'll interview them. I will interview them about their culture for about 25 minutes, and we'll get to get some knowledge about their culture first, for two reasons, because not everyone will be perhaps in a position to express himself or herself fluently in English, so this can cause a bit of a problem, and I apologize for this for future program, because I expect it to happen. However, I'm sure they will give us enough food for thought so that we will ourselves form an opinion about culture. After all, we are always reading culture, in a sense we are always interpreting other people's culture. We try to understand this as much as possible, but objectivity is very difficult to reach. However, I wanted to start the series with an introduction on what is culture, basically. I have a book at home which has been in use in social sciences, and the philosophy of social sciences, by Chalmers, called What is This Thing Called Science? And my guest today is Mr. Ranier Sadni, whom, as you all know, is a lecturer in the program of anthropology at our university. And I would like to start exactly with this question. What is this thing called culture?
Well, it means several things. The word itself was not just a concept when it was coined, it was also an image. So it was drawn from the image of horticulture. I mean, Jane Austen would have used the word culture to mean horticulture or gardening. And as some of the other words that are used in this context suggest, for example, the idea of a cultured person being a cultivated person, or a person who is in touch with his or her culture being a person who is in touch with his or her roots. The images of being tied, a certain tie to one's land or country, is intrinsic to that image. Now, the notion of culture in this sense became important in the early period of nationalism. And it has a dual sense, which is still reflected in our usage. On the one hand, it was supposed to refer to popular culture, that which bound everyone, every national, to that particular land, which was claimed as the land and the state of the nation. So it bound up everyone. On the other hand, culture was also used to mean the best that had been thought, painted, expressed in that culture, and therefore also had an elitist or artistic sense to it.
We used to refer also to the language of culture.
Yes.
And the language
culture. Yes, and I mean, there are distinctions that are sometimes made between high and low culture, or elite and popular culture, or the culture of the masses. It would seem that the word is referring to two different things altogether. However, if we see that culture, in whatever sense we use it, always has a sense that refers to a set of ideas, styles of thought, not just thoughts, ways of expression and understanding oneself, self-images that are shared with everyone. And therefore inherited. And a reference also to something creative, of what one makes out of one's circumstances and the way one understands them and changes them. And we can see that whether we're talking about so-called low culture or popular culture or high culture, the creative and the imitative go hand in hand.
Yes, I wish to return to one point which you have just made, the etymological origin, so to say, and even the visual origin of the concept of culture, and you mentioned territory. What would you think would be more important, the territory or the group?
Well, this is, I mean, I was indicating the, so to speak, the historical origins or genealogy, as we might call it, of the notion as we use it today, which is why in popular discussions of culture, culture is often associated with ethnic groups or nations, national cultures. Sometimes, for example, although there are other reasons for this, for example, in North America, the term culture is used almost interchangeably with society. So I come from this culture rather than I have or belong to this culture. I would myself subscribe to the view that it is misleading to associate or to interchange terms like culture with a term like society, or to associate the term culture exclusively with an ethnic group or a nation. Organizations can have a culture, and one can speak of nations, a single nation, having more than one culture within it. And depending on the basis of comparison, also speaking of several nations sharing in one culture. Now here the problem is that it all depends on what you're discussing. As you know, if we're discussing the differences, if we're comparing different European nation states today, we might well therefore distinguish between, for example, German capitalism or Rhineland capitalism and Anglo-Saxon capitalism. But if we're comparing capitalism in general with other systems like feudalism, then we can see that there is much more there, that so-called Rhineland or Japanese or Anglo-Saxon industrial capitalism share together, then differentiates them if what we're comparing is that kind of society with samurai Japan or feudal Europe. And it's the same with culture. I mean, there is definitely a strong argument of speaking of a Euro-American culture, you know, with a, you know, a liberal democratic culture, that despite the various and important differences, if you're going for a fine-grained comparison, but despite those differences, have a great deal in common when comparing with other cultures. So how one uses the word culture and what it encapsulates also depends on the scale of comparison. But at the micro level, now we would find that even particular organizations have culture, because generally culture is not given only by ideas. It's not intellectual. It's also bound by practices and obligations. It has to do with practices which involve reciprocal.
Yes, I was coming to this point. We can say that culture is the glue which binds a group of people together. And what are the elements which constitute this glue, so to say?
Well, one can conceive it as a glue, although one can also think of
other
glues.
And it's more interactive, of course.
One can speak of having common interests as being a common a glue. By interests, I mean even, so to speak, issues of property can bind people together, whether they like it or not, because they have to administer it jointly, and until they can divide it if they wish to divide it. So it's important, I mean, I'm mentioning this because culture naturally does have a certain consensus at its heart. In other words, a consensus of what's important. But culture can also be characterized by conflict. In other words, it is peculiar to a particular culture that a certain kind of argument or debate tends to magnetize it and tends to turn up again and again. For example, I would say that Christianity tends to it has more than, it encapsulates much more than one culture, mm-hmm. of course, but one can see a certain recurrence throughout its history, for example, of debates centered on the spirit versus the letter of the law, on whether icons are graven images or part of the god. These tend to recur in debate, and the debate itself is part of a tradition that is handed down. So it's important. I mean, the point here is that cultures can actually be polarizing cultures. While binding people together, they also divide at once, because identity and difference go together. Let me give a more trivial example. I think anyone who habitually reads European broadsheet newspapers and then comes to Malta and reads a paper like the Sunday Times, which, less so nowadays, but up till 4 years ago, regularly used to have at least one of the three full pages it dedicates to letters to the editor, devoted to letters concerning religion. Usually, quite often disputes over whether the church is worthy or not, and whether it's been the bane of Malta's history or its gift, etc. Now, someone,
or whether we should have a village festival or not.
Yes, yes, and whether it's paganism or whether it isn't. Now, someone reading it from within a Maltese context might say, "My gosh, look at all these arguments and debates. The hold of religion is weakening." And of course, the debates are very fiery. But someone seeing it from an outside perspective would be first of all struck by the fact that the full page is being dedicated to matters concerning religion, even if they're fiery arguments, because other newspapers in Europe wouldn't do that. And so we see that there is, in fact, on the one hand, an unspoken assumption that matters of religion are important, even if they're debated and they're hotly argued over. So we can see that actually we need to, in this case, think of culture as, on the one hand, encapsulating all those things that are assumed to go without saying. You don't need a debate, it's religion is important, mm-hmm. whether you hate it or whether you like it or whether you're mildly indifferent. And then within that, you know, large box, shall we say, of unspoken assumptions, which seem natural to those who belong to the culture, but which don't seem all that natural and are, in a way, much more evident to those that don't belong to it. Within that, you actually have room for lots of debate and even hostility, with some people calling the others heretics and the others calling the others cut off and elitist and whatever. So a culture itself can encapsulate within it certain patterns of debate.
Yes, and you say about taking it for granted.
It might not be experienced as glue, even if it is glue. That's
I had a professor, this idea of almost not knowing what your culture is while you have to analyze it to find it out. Mm-hmm. One of our professors used to tell us, culture is what we forget, in the sense that culture is what we take for granted.
It is that. I wouldn't say that's all it is, because an important aspect of culture, and indeed it's important even in historical evolution of human societies, is that point when something that goes without saying is made explicit. Usually the development of writing historically in human history made this possible, because, I mean, we know it even from our own experience. when you write something down, even if they're your own thoughts, you then have the luxury of being able to look at your own thoughts with detachment, and even critically, and even say, actually, I don't agree with what I've just said, and revise your view. So the process of explicating something is also an important cultural process. It is why writing is a technology of the intellect, some people describe it. And it's also an important part of therapy in some instances. In other words, the first step to emancipation, whether it's economic emancipation or whether it's something more therapeutic and psychological, is, so to speak, being able to name your pain, as they say. So this is why writers like Marx drew a distinction between people who share a common destiny economically but don't recognize it, what he called a class in itself, and people who do recognize it, what he called a class for itself, and who therefore could work together on a political project to emancipate themselves. So it's not just what goes without saying, but what goes without saying is definitely very important.
Very often we speak of, I mean, we don't speak anymore about primitive culture. Now we speak more of pre-literate culture, because the culture is a question of our lives across history. And central to these are values. And certain you hear people speaking, we are losing our values. I think it's a misnomer. We cannot live without values. What do you think of it in terms of anthropology? Can people live without values? They can have values which you don't like, but for them they are still values.
Yes, I think, I'm not sure how useful the word values is, because it's one of these porridge words. I mean, it means so many things that it becomes difficult to pin down. But as you say, I mean, if for a culture to have no values means for a culture or a people or an individual to be entirely indifferent, not just to breakfast, but to whatever happens to them during the day and whatever happens to them tomorrow, as soon as an individual begins to select something being more important to pay attention to than something else, then selection implies valuation. You've evaluated different possibilities and you've, so to speak, put them in priorities. So that involves values. And it's impossible to get away with that. I mean, even a hermit has values, even if one of them might include the value of isolation. So in this respect,
like the value of silence, actually.
Yes. So in this respect, yes, values can be transformed. Values might not be shared, but values might even be seen as dangerous. They're not necessarily positive. I mean, you can be a nihilist and revel in that. But you're right. You can't be human and not attach or have subscribe to values, because the moment you're giving meaning to what you're doing, and to a certain extent, even if you say what I'm doing has no meaning, you are selecting things, and that means you are evaluating and valuing them over others.
As we've said, that most of our cultural bag is inherited. We know are inherited. We know there is no immaculate conception of social reality. Can one speak of a constructed culture? That is, can we construct a culture? Say, let's start a new culture. Is it possible to do that?
Well, first of all,
evolved from your present culture, because that's normal. Mm-hmm. Culture has evolved. But
I mean, there are two issues involved in your question. One, can a culture change fundamentally? And the second is, can this be planned? Because they're two different things. You said a culture is mostly inherited. Well, that depends on the scale of, you know, what you're talking about. I mean, sometimes cultures do change so rapidly that people brought up and members of a certain generation might well begin to say, well, things no longer make sense to us. I mean, this is not what we were brought up to believe is right, or what we were brought up to believe about how things should work. And the younger generation might actually, in that same society, might also accuse the older generation of being naive, of having brought them up on a big lie, and this would in fact tend to be a culture where, so to speak, ideas and concepts are not quite synchronized with the organization of politics and the economy. So you do have a strong sense of appearance not cohering with reality. So you can have fundamental changes. I mean, it depends on the scale of things that you're discussing. And you can have rapid and fundamental changes even in pre-literate societies. So that's one point. Whether you can plan it, that would depend on what kind of organizational control you have. I mean, but the short answer is, as with even the organization of society or politics or the economy, you always have unintended consequences, partly because you may not be quite aware of all that the culture entails, so you can't address it because there are these unspoken assumptions. That's the short answer.
I know that people can distinguish between, so to say, hard reality and symbolic reality. Do you think culture is mainly symbolic?
No, culture envelops, if that's the word, but it is connected to our perception of reality. The idea that people have that some symbols are token and other things are not symbols but real things is itself a cultural phenomenon, because you don't find that it is consistent. People are never fully, so to speak, and trapped isn't the word, but never fully immersed in their own culture. They can always manage some ironic distance, particularly in our age, because other ways of viewing things are available. But a cultural anthropologist would argue that culture isn't just about what religion says. If religion seems symbolic and not quite real, that says something about the fact that it's the way it informs our worldviews is a bit weaker in terms of religion institutions than it used to be. But for example, the way we talk about economics, as though economics is the real base of society, actually entails many cultural assumptions. I mean, the idea of the free market, that competition is the best way to decide things, that it's the most efficient. The idea that you've got entire populations that are either more productive this year or less productive this year. Those are all fundamentally cultural assumptions. I mean, productivity, in the way it's used, isn't related only to how hard people work, but it's related to a certain way in which they must work. So, no, I think most of the interesting, really interesting work on culture has to do with how our ideas about medicine, whether we're talking about sanity or insanity and madness, sexuality, the way we think about which community or society we really belong to, if we belong to any at all, the way we can't imagine any fundamental political units, at least we tend to increasingly nowadays, other than the state and the individual. Those are all profoundly cultural ideas. They would have struck people elsewhere, our ancestors and our descendants, as very peculiar.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sadni, for your contribution to this program and this enjoyable discussion about culture. And thank you also to our listeners, and we'll be back next week.